Good evening. It is a blessing to be together. So this month, we got two questions. And they actually turned out to be kind of big ones. Actually, the first one ended up being a little bigger than I expected it to be, more complex than I expected it to be. So we'll go ahead and get booted up here. While that's working, I'll go grab the board. Okay. Our first question is about the Last Supper and about something that we observed whenever we were wrapping up the Harmony of the Gospels class. We were reading through the towards the end of John as he is recounting the crucifixion. Turn to John chapter 18. Yeah, we'll just let the text suggest the question. John chapter 18, verse 28. Alright, so this is after Peter has been before the council, and they have accused him of blasphemy, and they've decided they've got enough to send him to Pilate and have him crucified. So verse 28. Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. Now at the time we notice it, this seems a little odd, the timing of this, because they're looking forward to eating the Passover. Here's what makes it weird. If we turn to any of the other gospel writers, just for instance, go to Luke chapter 22. We find our accounts of the Last Supper in the Synoptic Gospels. Luke chapter 22, there are other parallels in Matthew chapter 26 and Mark chapter 14. We'll focus our reading in Luke 22. Verse 7, just right out of the gate. Then came the day of unleavened bread on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. All right, now, we'll go ahead and read the rest of the passage. So Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and prepare the Passover for us, that we may eat it." They said to him, "Where will you have us prepare it?" He said to them, "Behold, when you have entered the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him into the house that he enters, and tell the master of the house, 'The teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you a large upper room furnished. Prepare it there." And they went and found it just as it had been told them, and they prepared the Passover. And when the hour came, he reclined at table, and the apostles with him. And he said to them, "I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you that I will not eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God." All right, and we'll stop there. Do you see the odd thing that's going on in between the two Gospels here? That here, the evening before Jesus is taken into to Pilate's headquarters, we'll just say this, Jesus and the apostles are eating supper together. They're eating a meal together. And based on our reading of Luke, and the readings in Matthew and Mark are very similar, based on our reading of Luke, what meal does it appear to be that they're eating? The Passover meal. And there are a lot of things that cue us into this. Luke begins by telling us it's the day on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. Jesus' instructions are, "Go and prepare the Passover for us that we may eat it." His message to the man with the upper room, the teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? Then when the hour comes and they actually recline at table, he says to them, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. And yet, the following morning, whenever the priests are delivering Jesus over to Pilate, they are looking forward to eating the Passover. They won't go into the governor's headquarters because they don't want to defile themselves. If they are defiled, then they can't eat the Passover. So what's going on? How can they be looking forward to eating the Passover if the Passover has already happened? Now, there's an option here. Well, perhaps. We'll throw this out as a perhaps. Perhaps this arises from the way that the Jews measure time, right? Remember, time goes from sunset to sunset, not from midnight to midnight. And so Jesus is eating the meal in the evening, so the beginning of their day. And, you know, during the what we would consider the following day, when the priests are taking Jesus into to Pilate's headquarters, it's still technically the same day. So maybe the priests are so, they're in such haste to have Jesus crucified that they have put off eating the Passover meal themselves until later in the day. And honestly, whenever I first received this question about, you know, what's going on with this text, you know, how do we square these two texts, my first suspicion was that that might have been the answer. And then the law of Moses had to go and throw a wrench in everything. Turn to Exodus chapter 12. Actually, it's not just the law of Moses that does this. We'll start with Moses, but then John himself is going to do a way, way more damaging job than what the law of Moses is going to tell us. Let's see. Yeah, Exodus chapter 12. We're not going to read the whole passage where we get the commandment for the Passover, but I just want to read enough just to put this option to rest. The idea that, well, it's technically still the same day, and so maybe the priests have just put off eating the Passover because they are in such a rush to crucify Jesus. Alright, so in Exodus chapter 12, we'll start in verse 8, talking about how you eat the lamb, the Passover lamb, which is the central element of the Passover meal. They shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire, with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Now look at verse 9. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted, its head with its legs and its inner parts, and you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning, you shall burn. All right, so what's the obvious problem with that option that we just floated, that the priests have just waited until later in the day to eat it? Well, it doesn't work. You have to eat it that night, and anything that's left over, you have to burn up. Now, you know, we could say, well, we know that the priests are obviously really bad guys. Maybe they are just, you know, throwing caution to the wind and flaunting everything. We know that that's not their character. All right, they have been willing to go so far as to falsely accuse Jesus of blasphemy, sedition, all sorts of crimes. But consider first off, why did they hire Judas to betray Jesus? Because they did not want to go out and arrest him publicly. Why did they not want to arrest Jesus publicly? They were afraid of the crowds. Go to Mark chapter 14. We get another little detail here. Right now, I just want us to focus on the character of these priests. Mark chapter 14, the first two verses. Now it was 2 days before the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to arrest him by stealth and kill him. For they said... Alright, now first off, notice Mark has also brought up this element of stealth. Arrest him not publicly, but privately. Get rid of him that way. But they said, verse 2, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar from the people. Alright, same exact motive. Same exact motive. They are afraid of popular opinion. Now, do we mean to say that these guys who are so scared of the public that they won't even lace up their own sandals the wrong way for fear of public opinion, that these guys are just going to publicly flaunt eating the Passover at the complete wrong time of the day, actually eating the Passover meal during the day when the Passover offering is supposed to have already been burnt up? It's not likely. I want to put on top of that, in case there's any doubt, a monkey wrench that John throws into everything. Go to John chapter 13. Now, as we have looked at Luke chapter 22, and if we were to look at Matthew 26, and if we were to look at the account in Mark 14, later in the chapter, if we looked at the account of the Last Supper, it seemed pretty clear to us that the meal they were taking was the Passover meal. And it's at that time that Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. Now, John recounts this same event to us, but as with most things, he does it very differently from the other gospel writers. The other gospel writers, you know, they contain this, this last meal in a very short space. We get some of the teachings of Jesus, but it's mainly the institution of the Lord's Supper, this question about who is going to betray Jesus, a question about who is going to be greatest in the kingdom, and then where do they go immediately after they finish their meal? What happens immediately after finishing the meal? Y'all remember? Yeah, they go out to Gethsemane. Jesus goes to pray, and it's at that point that Judas betrays him and he is arrested. Notice the way that John recounts this. That entire thing that fits, you know, within like the span of a chapter in all the synoptic gospels starts in John chapter 13 and does not finish until John chapter 18. All right, it's in John 18. The beginning of the chapter, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Alright, so this is the same thing that we know from the other Gospels, that after Jesus has finished these final teachings at this Last Supper, he goes to the garden, he goes to pray, and Judas betrays him there and he's arrested. And that's what we read about at the beginning of John chapter 18. Now, when John says, when Jesus had spoken these words, if you've got a red letter Bible, you know, the kind that shows the words of Jesus in red, how many words are we talking about that Jesus has just spoken? Basically, all of chapters 13 through 17, John gives us a lengthy discourse that Jesus teaches during the Last Supper, but the other gospel writers just don't mention, by and large. There are a couple of elements that are in common. For example, in chapter 13, verse 21, after saying these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit and testified, "Truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of his disciples, whom Jesus loved, was reclining at table at Jesus' side. So Simon Peter motioned to him to ask Jesus of whom he was speaking. So that disciple, leaning back against Jesus, said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is he whom I will give this morsel of bread when I have dipped it." So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. All right, now this same event we read about in the Synoptics. All right, we're talking about the same meal here, even though John gives us a lot more teaching than the Synoptics do. And John does not include the teaching on the Lord's Supper, the institution of the Lord's Supper. We are talking about the same event, the Last Supper, where they have gone into that upper room, and they are, this is the last meal that Jesus shares with his apostles. Now go to chapter 13, verse 1. And John gives us a time frame for when this meal happens. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, that is, the Last Supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. And we know after that that he washes the disciples' feet. When does John tell us this meal happens? Before the feast of the Passover. He does not say that it is the Passover. He says, before the feast of the Passover, this meal happens. To pile onto this, because John is consistent in this, that what's going on here is happening before the Passover, not during the Passover. Let's go back down to the betrayal prediction in John 13. Let's see. All right, so in verse 26, he dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas. Verse 27, then after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. Jesus said to him, "What you are going to do, do quickly." Now, no one at the table knew why he had said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money bag, Jesus was telling him, "Buy what we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. But notice what John tells us, that some of the disciples who were present thought that Jesus, whenever he says, "What you are going to do, do quickly," what Jesus means is that Judas needs to go out quickly and buy what we need for the feast. Now this seems like an odd instruction if they have just taken the feast, right? Why would they think, if they're sitting there at the feast, why would they think that Jesus has just told Judas to go buy stuff for the feast? The feast has already happened. That was like half an hour ago before the foot washing, right? So what's going on here? Furthermore, go to John chapter 19. Again, John is really consistent in this. He doesn't just mention this once or twice, but he consistently and repeatedly tells us that all of this is happening before the Passover. John chapter 19, we'll start in verse 12. From then on, Pilate sought to release him. All right, so that's the context. Jesus has been delivered over to Pilate. Pilate is seeking to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now, it was the day of preparation of the Passover, and it was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." But notice the time, the date that John gives us. It was not the day of the Passover, John says, but it was the day of the preparation of the Passover. But in other words, not only has the supper already happened, Jesus has already been delivered over to Pilate, and it is not yet the Passover, according to John. By the way, here's where this is the point where John and the Synoptic Gospels start to come into more obvious agreement with each other. Now, that's not to say that the rest of it is in disagreement. That just means we're getting to a point where the agreement is obvious, and we're going to try to explain the points where the agreement is less obvious. But John tells us it's the day of preparation for the Passover. He repeats that in verse 31, since it was the day of preparation and so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. All right, so Jesus is crucified on the day of preparation. Verse 42. So because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was close at hand, they laid Jesus there. Talking about Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus. That they have requested Jesus' body. Pilate takes Jesus down and gives his body over to Joseph and to Nicodemus, and they go to a tomb that Joseph owns, and they bury Jesus there on the day of preparation. So John has told us in multiple points it's on the day of preparation. And this is the point, again, where the synoptics clearly agree. Go to Luke chapter 23. We'll just take one example. If we go through all of them, it's going to take too long. Luke chapter 23, towards the end of the chapter, recounting, again, the same events, where Joseph of Arimathea requests Jesus' body, and he goes and he puts the body in a tomb. Verse 54, Luke tells us it was the day of preparation, and the Sabbath was beginning. Now, if you were just reading Luke, and I think Mark may actually say the day of preparation of the Sabbath. But as you're reading Luke, as you're reading Mark, you look at this title, the day of preparation, it seems like it's connected to the Sabbath. He doesn't explicitly mention the Passover in this context. But what John has explained to us, it is not just the preparation for the Sabbath, it is also the preparation for the Passover. All right, so what's going on here? When did the Passover happen in all of this mix? What was this Last Supper that Jesus had with his disciples? Was it the Passover meal, or was it something else? All right, so what I want us to do to help clear this up is to go back to the law of Moses and consider the way the Passover is supposed to play out. Exodus chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 1. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, "This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you." By the way, the Exodus doesn't tell us the name of the month. In Deuteronomy 16, we learn the name of that month is Aviv. Or your translation might say Abib. The ESV says Abib, because in Hebrew, B and V are the same letter. Aviv sounds cooler. Abib sounds like something you put on a baby. So we'll go with Aviv. Alright, so it's the month of Aviv. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons. According to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male, a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. And you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs. Your translation might say at twilight. The ESV says at twilight. Anybody have something different in their translations?
In the evening.
In the evening? Okay. The Hebrew, and your footnotes might say this, the Hebrew says between the two evenings. And I think that's going to be important. But let's keep track of where we're at so far. All right, so on the 10th of Aviv, you set aside the lamb. So you're picking out the Passover lamb. You go through your flocks. You find a yearling that is without blemish. And you say, you're the guy. All right. And you hold on to him until... Now we're going to leave a little space here because this is not the only thing that you're going to do on the 14th of Aviv. But one of the things that you're going to do... And we'll put it second, is between the two evenings, you are going to sacrifice the Passover lamb. Okay, let's continue reading. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. They shall eat the flesh that night roasted on the fire. With unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. And before we continue any further, they shall eat the flesh that night roasted on the fire. Talking about the Passover lamb. So, whenever you eat the Passover lamb, what is the date? It's still the 14th? When does the next day start? The next day starts in the evening. You shall eat the flesh that night. All right, so if you have sacrificed... So if it's the 14th of Aviv, between the two evenings, that's when you make the sacrifice. The next evening is the start of the 15th of Aviv. Remember, the evening is the beginning of the day for them. You eat the Passover feast. All right, so that includes the roasted lamb, that includes the unleavened bread and the bitter herbs. This happens, again, in the evening, which is the first part of their day, and in the morning, well, what do you have to do in the morning? Let's read on. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted, its head with its legs and its inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning, you shall burn. All right, so what do you do in the morning on the 15th of Aviv? You burn whatever is left of the lamb. So we'll just say, burn the leftovers. All right, let's see, let's read on. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. So before we continue on, let's think through the first Passover. Because obviously you're not going to have this part happening every single year. But for this first Passover, you're putting the blood of the lamb on your doorpost and on your lintel. That happens on the 14th after you have sacrificed the lamb. You take the blood, you put it up on the doorpost, and then that night, you're staying inside all night, you're eating the Passover feast, and during the night, the Lord is going through and he is executing his wrath on Egypt. All right, and if he sees the blood on your doorpost and on your lintel, he passes over you. So that happens on the 15th during the night. In the morning, you're still alive thanks to the Passover lamb's blood. You burn the leftovers of the Passover lamb. Okay, let's see. Verse 13, the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord. Throughout your generations, as a statute forever, you shall keep it as a feast. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day you shall hold a holy assembly, and on the seventh day a holy assembly. No work shall be done on those days, but what everyone needs to eat, that alone may be prepared for you. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a statute forever. In the first month, from the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days, no leaven is to be found in your houses. If anyone eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwelling places, you shall eat unleavened bread. Excuse me. So, what we learn is that on top of the Passover is closely associated with another feast, like we've been reading about in the Gospels. We've heard reference not just to the Passover, but to the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The Passover basically inaugurates the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so the other thing that you're doing on the 14th of Aviv, in the evening, very first thing is you scour the house of leaven. So starting at the beginning of the 14th of Aviv, that is in the evening, you have to get all of the leaven out of your house. You may eat nothing leavened, which is why the Passover feast includes unleavened bread. And then eating unleavened bread continues all the way through the 21st of Aviv. You're just going to continue eating unleavened bread. Sorry, that's kind of sloppy. Writing on the bottom of the board is hard. All right, so this entire time you're going to be eating unleavened bread. But it starts on the 14th with the scouring of the house. Then during the day, sometime between the two evenings, you sacrifice the lamb. The evening of the next day, the 15th, you eat the Passover feast. The following morning, you incinerate the leftovers, and you continue to eat unleavened bread all through. All right, and what we read after that in Exodus is just that they continue to do, that they actually go about doing that. All right, now, this, I think, helps us make some sense of what's going on with Jesus. Let's see. I'll hold on to that detail for just a second. All of the gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all agree that Jesus was arrested, arrested, tried, crucified, and buried on the day of preparation for the Passover, which means the 14th of Aviv. Whenever you see the gospel writers referring to the day of preparation, particularly the day of preparation for the Passover, we're talking about this day where at the very beginning of the day you scour your house of leaven, and then later in the day you sacrifice the lamb. And this is all referred to as the day of preparation of the Passover, because these two feasts, Passover and unleavened bread, become so, they're so closely associated that over the course of time, people start to refer to them like they use them to refer to each other. In other words, they become a metonymy for each other. You can refer to the whole Feast of Unleavened Bread as the Passover. In fact, I think that's what modern Jews do, typically. How long does a modern Jew observe the Passover? A week. What they're referring to is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Accordingly, so this phrase, the Passover, can mean a number of things. It can mean the Passover feast that happens on the 15th of Aviv. It can also mean, sometimes it's used to refer to the day of preparation itself on the 14th of Aviv. Sometimes it refers to the whole week, the whole Feast of Unleavened Bread going from the 14th through the 21st. And that leads to some confusion, because sometimes, well, as we're reading through, and it refers to the Passover, it could refer to any number of things going on here. I want us to return to let's return to the Synoptic Gospels. We're going to spend some time in Luke. But before we actually start reading there, let me suggest to you, because first off, all right, so we said that Jesus was crucified on the day of preparation, sometime in the afternoon. We'll get to the specific time later. That's recorded in the Gospels. In the afternoon of the day of preparation. Which means that the meal that he and his disciples ate that previous evening was not the Passover meal. That's the point that I want to get at. That the Last Supper was not a Passover meal. And if we understand that, that the Last Supper was a separate meal happening on the 14th of Aviv, a whole day before the Passover feast was eaten on the 15th of Aviv, I think that helps clear up some things that happen in the Gospels. First off, it explains, or at least it is consistent with what we read earlier in Mark chapter 14. The priests were saying to themselves that they didn't want him crucified during the feast because they feared an uproar. All right. Now, if Jesus was eating the Passover, that means that he was crucified over Passover, which means that for literally no reason at all, the priests completely failed in their mission. And he was crucified on the one day that they didn't want him crucified. All right, they could have just told Pilate, hey, hold off on crucifying this guy until we're done with Passover. It would have been that simple. But if the Last Supper is the Passover feast, they have failed spectacularly. The Gospels don't give us the sense that they think they have failed spectacularly in this regard. It also, let's consider the dinner itself. What does the Passover feast consist of, by the way? What are the elements of the Passover feast that we just read about in Exodus chapter 12? The roasted lamb, yeah, the bitter herbs, and the unleavened bread. All right, read through all of the gospel accounts of the Lord's, or the Last Supper. What thing do they not eat? You never see them eating the lamb. They don't eat the lamb because it's not the Passover meal. Now, you do see them eating unleavened bread because, go back to Luke chapter 22. Let's reread our text here through the lens of what we've just learned from Exodus and see if this makes slightly different sense to us. Then came the day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. All right, from what we've read from Exodus chapter 12, what day is Luke talking about? He's talking about the 14th. This is the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It is also the day on which the Passover lamb has to be sacrificed. So that day comes, and by the way, what time of the day does that day start? It starts in the evening. So Jesus sent Peter and John saying, "Go and prepare the Passover for us that we may eat it." And they said to him, "Where will you have us prepare it?" He said to them, "Behold, when you have entered the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him into the house that he enters, and tell the master of the house, 'The teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you a large upper room furnished. Prepare it there." And they went and found it just as they had told him, and they prepared the Passover. Now this still seems like a really odd way for Luke to be expressing things. They prepared the Passover. There was one little bit that I missed. Does anybody know off the top of your head where the Passover lamb has to be sacrificed? Can you just sacrifice it anywhere? Go to Deuteronomy chapter 16. Hey, keep your finger there in Luke 22. We won't be long in Deuteronomy 16. We're just going to get this little piece of information out of Deuteronomy. I told you, this question ended up being way bigger and more complex than I thought it was when I first pulled it out of the box. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 16. "Observe the month of Aviv, and keep the Passover to the Lord your God, for in the month of Aviv the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night, and you shall offer the Passover sacrifice to the Lord your God from the flock or the herd at the place that the Lord will choose to make his name dwell there. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat it with unleavened bread, the bread of affliction. For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that all the days of your life you may remember the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. No leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh that you sacrifice on the evening of the first day remain all night until morning. You may not offer the Passover sacrifice within any of your towns that the Lord your God is giving you, but at the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name dwell in it. There you shall offer the Passover sacrifice in the evening at sunset at the time that you came out of Egypt." So where does the Passover sacrifice have to be made? Specifically, where in Jerusalem? In the temple, where God is chosen for his name to dwell. The Passover lamb sacrifices all happened in the temple. You couldn't just go sacrifice anywhere. Whenever Jesus says, "Go and prepare the Passover," they go up. Luke 22:13. They went and found it, that is the upper room, just as he had told them. They prepared the Passover. Are they sacrificing the Passover lamb in the upper room? You know what a mess that is? You ever exsanguinated an animal? They have a lot of blood. They're not sacrificing the Passover lamb. First of all, it would have been a sin, because they are not to do it. It's against the law. Well, what else do you have to do to prepare for the Passover? Is sacrificing the lamb the only thing? You also have to scour the house of leaven. So Peter and John got stuck with the task of scouring the house down and making sure there was no leaven in it. Now, is it possible that they could have gone and sacrificed the Passover lamb somewhere else? No, it would have still been a sin. It would have been breaking the law. It has to be sacrificed at the temple. What if they showed up a day early with a lamb? Could they have made the sacrifice then? The priest would have told them to buzz off, because it's the wrong day. You don't offer the Passover lamb on that day. Between the two evenings. So we need to get to this detail. Between the two evenings. Alright, so if they had come like at the end of the 13th or the very beginning of the 14th, Right, at evening. Now, again, our English translations say at evening or at twilight. The Hebrew tells us it's between the two evenings. And our English translations are doing a little interpreting for us. Josephus tells us what the actual practice was during his day, and he was a contemporary of Jesus. The sacrifice, he said, did not happen until the afternoon of the 14th. So, he records that the sacrifices begin at the 9th hour of the day and end at the 11th hour of the day. In other words, they run from about 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. on the 14th of Aviv. Now, if Peter and John showed up at the temple at, you know, midnight, after scouring the house for leaven, and they happen to have a lamb with them, again, the priests are going to tell them, go away. You know, come back again tomorrow at 3. This is when we sacrifice the lambs. So technically the correct day, not the correct time. Excuse me. Plus, we also have to keep in mind what we already know from John. Remember in John chapter 13 and verse 29, the disciples think that Jesus has sent Judas out to do what? To buy supplies for the feast. In other words, in John's account, the feast has not happened yet. So they haven't sacrificed the lamb. They haven't prepared the meal itself. They haven't prepared the feast. They have prepared the house for the Passover, which they expect to be taking with Jesus the following day. Now, continuing in Luke chapter 22, when the hour came, he reclined at table and the apostles with him, and he said to them, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Yet not referring to the meal that he is currently eating, but this coming Passover, the meal that we're going to share tomorrow, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you, I will not eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. Now here, does the New King James or the Old King James read a little bit differently in that verse? For I tell you, I will not eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. No? It reads about the same? Okay. All right. Never again. Yes. And I don't have my Greek Testament with me. If you are looking, if you've got something like the ESV, or the New American Standard, in your footnotes, it may say some manuscripts read, never eat it again. Now this is where I think this is probably the most uncertain point, excuse me, in everything, that in our Greek manuscripts that we have for Luke's Gospel, some of them say, for I tell you, I will never eat it again until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. In other words, suggesting that he is currently eating it, and it's just not going to happen again. Some of our manuscripts read, for I tell you, I will not eat it, as in not eat it at all, until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. In other words, what we often interpret Jesus to mean as, I'm eating it now, but I'm not going to eat it again until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. What he's actually saying is, I really want to eat it this year, but I'm not going to get to. I'm not going to eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. Let's see, and it finally explains why the priests are looking forward to eating the Passover meal if they are taking him in on the morning of the 15th. They've taken him in on the morning of the 14th of Aviv. So they have, basically the sequence of events is they go, they find the upper room, they scour the house. Jesus arrives. They share a meal of unleavened bread and wine together. Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. We have the various teachings that we read in John chapter 13 through 17. And then after dinner, he goes out to the garden to pray. He is betrayed. He is put on trial. And this is all happening overnight. He's put on trial before the priests, before the council. Then early in the morning, we are told, they deliver him over to Pilate, but they don't go into the headquarters because they don't want to be defiled, because they are looking forward to eating the Passover feast that evening, the 15th of Aviv. Wayne? The description's a little different. I think it puts the unleavened, the Feast of Unleavened Bread on the 15th, does it not? Yeah.
It's on the 15th for 7 days.
Right.
It says here, 14th day of the first month of twilight, is the Lord's Passover.
Right.
Passover hasn't happened on the 14th.
Right. But here's the thing. Passover does not always mean Passover feast. Remember, the Passover can refer to the whole shebang. It can refer to the preparations for the feast. It can refer to the feast itself. And any time that you see that phrase, at twilight, that's a rendering of this phrase, between the two evenings.
That's what's so confusing to all of us.
Yeah.
We don't have that.
Right.
Nobody has ever read that. I have never heard of that book.
Right. At the very least, it's in my footnotes, and I went ahead and looked it up to confirm.
And I haven't seen that an awful lot, so I don't know, you know, I'm just going to what I know.
Right.
What I know is that the 14th was the Passover, and the 15th was the start of another feast.
Right. And that's why this is an example of how important our translations are, because there is no such thing as a translation that does not engage in interpretation. And whenever the translation says it's at evening or it's at twilight, they're not rendering just the literal text there. They're interpreting when that is. And in fact, a lot of our translations, like for example, as I'm reading the ESV in Luke chapter 22, it's got those section headings, like a lot of our Bibles do. Mine over verse 7 says, the Passover with the disciples. The translators of the ESV, who have inserted these paragraph headings, they think it's the Passover. They've given us their interpretation of it. And if we take what John says about everything, it can't be the Passover. That's the thing. Like, as we're reading John, we're not left with the possibility that Jesus was taking the Passover. But if we take this all with what we learn in Exodus 12, I think it makes sense of everything, and things start to fall into place. Let's see. Now, the last thing, I think the most important thing that this does for us, this is not, I think, just some... a matter of, you know, running through all the technical stuff and, oh, isn't this so cool? We can work with Jewish calendars and stuff. It's so neat. I want us to remember, as we just went over this a minute ago, when did Josephus say that they started sacrificing the Passover lambs? The ninth hour on the 14th of Aviv. It's between the two evenings. They start sacrificing at the ninth hour, and they go until the 11th hour. Turn to Mark chapter 15. This will be our last passage for tonight. Yeah, we'll end it with this one question. Mark chapter 15, verse 33. And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders hearing it said, behold, he is calling Elijah. And someone ran and filled a sponge with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to take him down. And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. So when did Jesus die? About the same time that they started sacrificing the Passover lambs. And I think that's the point that John's trying to get at with us. And there's a reason why we make this close association between the Lord's Supper, which was instituted during the Last Supper. We make a close connection between that and the Passover because it is a feast of remembrance, and it is specifically a feast of remembrance for our Passover lamb. And Paul explicitly calls Jesus our Passover lamb, I think in 1 Corinthians 5:7. We are to see Jesus as the Passover sacrifice for us. That his blood covers the doorposts of our hearts, so to speak. That it is on account of his sacrifice that we escape the wrath of God. That we escape the plague that he is bringing upon mankind for sin. And I want to end with that thought. Go ahead and take out your songbooks. Jesus is our Passover sacrifice. Without him, we would be hopelessly dead. But the hope that we have in Jesus is only found in Jesus. It is not found anywhere else outside of Jesus. So it may be that you're here tonight and you have not become a disciple of Jesus, or that maybe you have abandoned your discipleship in Christ and have gone after another way and need to return. Whatever your need may be, we stand ready to help you if you'll make it known by coming forward as together we stand and sing.